T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Tony, let's go.
Make me a bicycle, clown.
Welcome in. My name is Lauren Tomes, here with you until 10 o'clock tonight. I am excited because we are at one of our favorite venues. We have taken the show on the road tonight. We are in DeKalb at Fatty's Pub. It's a Miller Lite Top Draft show. Lance Briggs will join me at 7 o'clock on the show, and we'll talk with him about Bears and all sorts of other stuff today from 7 until 8:30. Here's what we have planned for you. We're going to talk with Anthony Heron in just a minute and get his football information. We're going to have Porter Moser on, the head coach of the Loyola Ramblers. That'll be at 6:40 before they take on UMKC. Lance will join me from 7 until 8:30. Our buddy Sam Fells will jump on at 8:40, and we'll talk with him about the big news of the day, Joel Quenneville getting fired. We'll talk with Dave Lato at 9 o'clock about DePaul as they get ready to take on Bethune-Cookman tomorrow. ISU head coach Dan Muller will join me after they are done with Florida Gulf Coast. And UIC head coach Steve McClain will join me after they are done taking on Notre Dame. We have a lot of stuff that needs to get done, but thanks to Miller Lite for bringing us out here. And thanks to the folks here at Fatty's for coming through. Everyone's got a big plate of food. They got some good drinks. The place is packed. We are going to have a good time tonight. I agree with that. My name isn't on the marquee, but that's all right. Lance's is, and so is the score. So I guess I'm going to be the score. So let's go back downtown and let's talk with our football expert on this show, Anthony Heron. Anthony does a lot of stuff. You can see him on the Fox 32 post, pre, and post game coverage of the Bears each week. You can check him out on Pac-12 Network. You can hear him on Big Ten Sirius Channel 372 as he does a morning show with our buddy Jason Goff, and they talk Big Ten sports all the way around. We're lucky to have him once a week breaking down stuff with us, and he joins me now here on The Score. What's up, Anthony?
Lawrence, what's good, man? I'm getting set to watch a lot more Big Ten basketball this year than I normally would as we get through the finishing stretch of the football season and basketball tipping off tonight. I got a couple of different TVs, one in front of me, one recording some stuff. So make sure I got my hoop mind right, too, as we get through the season here.
Yeah, you're going to have to be juggling a whole bunch of stuff, but I have full faith that you're going to be able to pull that off. Because we're a little bit abbreviated today because we got Porter Moser at 6:40. So there's a lot of topics that I want to get to with you, and I don't know how much time I'm going to be able to spend on each one, but I know that you're going to do a thorough job of breaking it down. So let's first talk about the Buffalo game. What should we take from that Buffalo game?
Well, I feel like it's a good thing that the Bears are in a position right now where they can go into a game against a team like the Buffalo Bills and not only be favored, but then to come out of dominating that game with everyone basically feeling like, you know what, that's what they were supposed to do. And it wasn't long ago. You know, you think back to whatever's been now, like 4 consecutive years with this team is drafted in the top 10 the entire tenure of Ryan Pace. So it's taken him a while to get the roster into the position that it's in right now, but it's here at this point. And so there's definitive, there is tangible progress that's here with this team. And to come out of the game against Buffalo and to perform in that way, and to still have imperfections, you know, to win a game by 32 points and still have as many imperfections as we've seen from the Bears. I think it's a very positive sign. And then when you factor in that they've been able to rest Khalil Mack for the last 2 weeks, they've been able to rest Allen Robinson for the last 2 weeks, they lost Kyle Long last week, and you know that's going to be an extended absence on his part. So you would anticipate the interior of the Bears offensive line between Cush and Daniels, with Whitehair remaining at center, will continue to improve with the shuffling around that's taking place there. So I think it's a positive sign that they're 5-3, and yet this is a team that as you get through November and December, we should anticipate they'll continue to play better football down the stretch.
So how did you think Mitchell Trubisky played? Because I know it wasn't like he had a ton of opportunities, nor did he really need to have a ton of opportunities. But in the opportunities that he had, how did he play?
It was one of his more meh games of the season, you know, especially when you look at what had been there for him the last couple of weeks. And one of the things that you and I spoke about last week was that it was starting to get to the stretch where Mitch was playing better football in the third and fourth quarter than he was throughout that initial stretch of game where, you know, the more scripted portion of play, and that was where his comfort zone was early in the season, where, all right, as long as I kind of know what to expect and I have a sense for what's coming, and Coach and I have already talked about this, then he would come out strong. And then once all the tricky stuff was kind of out of the playbook, that's where Mitch would flatten out or even just flat out play bad during some of the stretches in the second half. It got to a point for a few games in a row where he was starting to play his best football when it was needed. And I spoke to you last week about what a positive sign that was for this team and for his development. And you know, I think it would have been nice for him to be more sharp in a game where the Bears were being so dominant. So I mean, you know, I'm curious right now, and when you look at some of the numbers from Pro Football Focus, and you know, in me and just talking to guys and texting with some of my friends around the league, you know, the scouting report is still such, and it's not overly surprising with his limited experience, that you can confuse Trubisky. You can pressure a quarterback either of two ways. I like to describe it as you could either pressure him mentally or physically. And the physical pressure, I believe their Pro Football Focus numbers were that on about half of his dropback passes, he was under pressure. So him being under duress, his mobility and his willingness to extend the play is something that ends up playing into his hands from that standpoint. But there were moments where he seemed a little bit sloppy. I would say there was a bit of regression from what we had seen over the last couple of weeks where, you know, mechanically within the pocket, some throws he missed. You saw where he was falling off of those throws at times. And for him, as he extended the play, one of the positive things I've taken from his willingness to extend the play and while he does it is that he seemed to have had a good feel this season for when to get down, when to protect the ball and cover up a bit, when to run out of bounds. And we did see a couple of sloppy moments, and one of those led to a fumble that the hustle of Eric Cush was able to recover. But you don't want to see in a game like that where the Bears fairly quickly dominate, where he gets into bad habits or gets sloppy with things. And I do think there was a bit of that from Mitch on Sunday.
Let's talk about a little bit of what the defense did. Actually, a lot, because there was some good stuff that they did. Obviously, they're playing against an offense that wasn't great. But Roquan Smith was everywhere, it seemed like, on Sunday. Is my amateur eye correct that he was making plays and playing sideline to sideline?
No, very correct. I feel like it was the most engaged against the run, especially, that I've seen Roquan so far this year. And I use the term engaged, not that he hasn't been putting in effort, but he was reading things on the run more quickly. He was reading the blocking schemes and getting downhill. You know, one of the things that I've sort of criticized Roquan for up to this point in the season is, as well as he's played for a rookie inside linebacker, is that he's been allowing blockers to advance on him and then just sort of using his natural physical tools to try to take over or to chase the ball carrier down. But when you're looking at him and Danny Trevathan, the difference is Danny, when he reads it, he has confidence in what his eyes are showing him, and he's immediately attacking downhill, engaging the blocker. I saw Roquan doing that more the other day, where he was being more aggressive downhill towards the blocker. And part of that reason, I would assume, is that he had that much more confidence in the secondary's ability to shut down the Peter man, and so he wasn't as worried about what would happen at the second and third level if he was a bit off or if his spacing was giving up some of that second and third level where he's downhill a bit too fast. So for him, he was trusting his eyes more, and he was being more downhill with the way he played the run. So that doesn't allow sometimes what can end up being a cavernous running lane for the back because your linebacker isn't taking a block on, you know, 4 or 5 yards away from the line of scrimmage. Roquan was getting more to the stage where he was taking that on at the line of scrimmage, and blitzing his fit is the term I like to use with that when I'm teaching young football players. So I love seeing that from him. What we did see, though, Roquan got exposed a bit in pass coverage. He got targeted 11 times throughout the game, and there ended up being like 75 yards after the catch. And it's, you know, for an inside linebacker, when you're covering some of these more athletic tight ends and inside receivers, it's not an easy task. But we did see where Buffalo felt like they could try to take advantage of where Roquan Smith was from an alignment standpoint. And, you know, he was a quality pass cover linebacker in college, and he's obviously more than athletic enough to do it. So that'll be just part of his continued development as well. But certainly against the run, I feel like, you know, the Miami game was one game that I really liked his level of activity and engagement. This is one where I felt like his reaction, his quick read and react of the run was even better than that. So I feel like against the run, this was certainly his best game. Against the pass, it was a game he's going to have the most film to learn from, because this is the first time I'd say where a team scouted out Roquan as a pass defender and attacked him. And for Buffalo, it did work a bit.
Talking with Anthony Heron, one of our football experts here at The Score. You can find him on Twitter at Big Ant Heron. You can watch him on Fox 32 after the game is over. You can check him out on Pac-12 Network, and you can listen to his show with Jason Goff on Big Ten XM Sirius Channel 372. Leonard Floyd, he had a big play. He got to the end zone. As my guys say on the football after show, he got his name called. So how did he play, and did he do enough as a pass rusher? He clearly did something in coverage, but did he do enough as a pass rusher to impress you?
Okay, it's just
no. All right.
So
no is the answer.
He's so gifted that my expectations are higher than what we saw the other day. And for him having increased opportunities, like I definitely agree with what the guys are talking about as far as his name being called is a good thing. But he has so many tools. He is so physically gifted for rushing the quarterback. I would still like to see more commitment to the way he rushes the quarterback. And that can be a difficult thing. But especially once you get into the second half of a game like that, where you know, one thing you know is that this is a quarterback who's hasn't handled being under duress well in his young NFL career, talking about the Peter man. But then beyond that, you know, regardless of who the quarterback is, that you have the opponent when they're down several scores and it's the second half of a ball game. You know, you've got the opponent in a situation where they have to pass the football, where they need to drop back and throw it. And that to me is where Leonard Floyd should be showing up consistently, just in harassing the quarterback over and over again. And I'm evaluating him at a different level right now than I am. Like, you know, there's further complaints or concerns that I would have about Roquan Smith is if he was in his third year in the league, and there were some of the things where I was still seeing a bit of hesitation or him not reading things as well or as quickly. You know, for Leonard Floyd, there are things I'm seeing from him that still look like a rookie pass rusher, an inexperienced pass rusher, which he still is inexperienced because of the amount of time he's missed in a young career. But at a certain point, especially as deep into the season as we are right now, you want to see a guy, for me, as I'm evaluating him as a pass rusher, I want to see a guy that has, you know, the term that you hear a lot, his ears pinned back. But in doing so, rushing with less concern for a mistake. And that's what I feel like I tend to see with Leonard Floyd. He's rushing in a manner sometimes where it's almost like he's worried about getting out of his gap or getting outflanked or, you know, perhaps trying to counter a bit too early before it's necessary. I want to see Leonard Floyd get to the point where he realizes he can impose his will on that offensive blocker, where he knows that I can get to the edge, or if I don't get to the edge on this snap, he's got to put everything in his soul into try to stop me from getting the corner. Once he's done that a couple of times, it'll set up my counter spin back inside. So I did see him once we got into the second half, attempting more moves. I want to see him in the initial phase, in phase one of his move, getting up the field with more speed, with more explosiveness, and that sets up his counter back inside, whether it's a counter club, whether it's a counter spin, whatever it is. I think that's what he'll need to recognize, is that the commitment he has to phase one of his move will set up phase two. And that's still not a point that he seems to be at consistently in his development as a pass rusher. Now, there's some other things he did well. I liked him in pass coverage. I like the effort. I've liked him against the run all the year, even though I know some of the national heads have complained about what he's done there. I think there's a, you know, there's a standard that he's judged by as a first round pick that, you know, at some points in some phases isn't always accurate or fair. His pass rushing is where I do feel like still lacks for what's there. There's some meat on the bone that can very easily and quickly be covered if he gets his mind right about how he approaches it.
Okay, well, let me just follow up on that real quick. Are you talking about technique or desire?
Good question. It's not a desire thing. It's a technical thing, because what you tend to see with young pass rushers, especially, is, you know, when, you know, one of the things with Khalil Mack not on the field, then Leonard Floyd does get more attention. There's more backs chipping on him. There's more tight ends, you know, providing additional distance between him and the quarterback, or, you know, sort of bumping him as they're beginning their route, you know, when they're going out onto their pass route within the tree. So overall, there are things he'll still need to get used to, things that won't necessarily happen as much, assuming Khalil Mack plays this week. Then Leonard Floyd, when he's on the field, won't necessarily be getting that type of attention like he's gotten over the last couple of weeks when Mack isn't on the field. But that being said, there's technical aspects to how you end up rushing that don't necessarily have to do with desire, but it has to do with a level of the term I always use when I'm teaching young pass rushers is commitment. Because when you're rushing with any level of hesitation, it's not necessarily because you're not putting the effort in. It's because you are sometimes worried about what the mistake would end up being. Like, by comparison, Isaiah Irving is a far more refined pass rusher, not nearly as physically gifted as Leonard Floyd. But when you see Isaiah Irving getting to the corner, it's because he is fully committed to how he's going to work that outside third of the pass protector, that offensive tackle. He's not worried about engaging the guy. He's not worried about looking back down inside in case there's a window or an escape angle for a quarterback. Isaiah Irving is getting up the field, working that outside arm, the outside hip, the outside shoulder of that pass blocker, and he tends to get home fairly consistently with that. Now, he doesn't seem to me to be a guy who's ever going to be just this hellacious pass rusher that folks have to game plan around, but he's far further along in his development with having a plan for his rush and then sticking with the commitment to that plan. Because one of the things that's underestimated about how you pass rush and the difficulty of it is that, just like if you're in a boxing ring and, you know, like Mike Tyson had the famous statement about everybody's got a plan until they get hit in the face. As a pass rusher, you got a plan until that guy punches you in the chest, you know, until he extends his arms and stuns your rush move. And then quite often that can end up throwing you off your rush and making you lose the commitment you need to have to executing that rush. That's where Leonard Floyd still is a bit right now. When he sees a back coming to chip him, when he sees a tight end who he needs to adjust his alignment because of or getting bumped off of that rush, it tends to sap a lot of his commitment, and he goes into a counter move too quickly. Whereas just to have that commitment, that explosion, and in a way the patience to commit to the first phase of the rush, knowing, especially as athletic, as explosive as he is, he'll have time to get home as long as he executes it with as much speed and ferocity and commitment as he can.
That is some great breakdown from Anthony Heron. It's one of the reasons why we love having him on the show, the way that he is able to make the game simple and plain for all of us that consume it. This segment being brought to you by Fogo de Show. The holiday season is a special time for gathering at Fogo de Show in Chicago, Rosemont, and Naperville. That's a special place to do it. Enjoy indulgent cuts like filet mignon or lamb chops, all carved tableside and served with a helping of cherished memories. For reservations, go to Fogo.com. That's Fogo de Show. We're going to take a break. More with Anthony. I want to talk to him about the flex game and getting ready for Thursday games and now having it be 8 hours sooner. We'll do that with him next here on The Score.
Chase Daniel with one more knee. They're not even going to let it go. It's it. 30 seconds to go, and the players come to midfield. The Bears come into Buffalo and do their job. They kick some tail. and they did it with defense. A couple of defensive touchdowns, four takeaways, a few sacks, and some Jordan Howard touchdown runs. Bears go to 5-3.
That highlight courtesy of our sister station, WBBM News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Jeff Joniak and Tom Thayer on the call on that. This segment is being brought to you by Credit Karma. Get your truly free credit score and free Credit Karma monitoring from Credit Karma. Download the Credit Karma app today. Credit Karma, get knowing. My name is Lawrence Holmes. I am here with you until 10 o'clock. We are at Fatty's Pub in DeKalb. It is popping here. If you're in the area, if you're in West Aurora, or even if you want to drive in from Rochelle, it's worth it. Come out here, hang out. Lance Briggs is going to be here with me from 7 until 8:30. Loyola head coach Porter Moser is going to join me in about 10 minutes. You don't want to miss that. We are in the middle of our conversation with Anthony Heron, who's doing a great job of breaking down Bear stuff for us. Anthony, there started to be some rumblings like after the game that the Bears game might get flexed to the Bears Vikings game might get flexed to the Sunday night game before they play the Thursday game against the Lions, which is the early game on Thanksgiving. I just want to get your thoughts. What's it like for an NFL player to get prepared on a short week, and how valuable are those 8 hours?
I'll use the term easier for lack of a better word. It's not as difficult at this point in the season than if this were to happen earlier in the year. Like, you know, when you're the New England Patriots and, you know, at this point, you know, the LA Rams, all the love they get, Philadelphia Eagles, the teams that are on national television frequently, and, you know, the teams who maybe travel overseas, the teams who early in the year have their schedule off kilter. It's more difficult at that point because you're, you know, regardless of, you know, it's certainly a veteran player. It's less of an adjustment, especially if you're a veteran player who's been in the same system for a while. But most certainly a team like the Bears that has an inexperienced roster with a first-year head coach. You've got defensive players who've been in this system, but a lot of offensive players who are still, you know, getting reps at certain things in certain situations for the first time. So it's more difficult for the Bears when their schedule gets kind of tossed up in the air and gets jumbled around, and then you got to kind of figure stuff out on the fly a little bit. But now that you're at this point in the year, it's not quite as big of a deal as if this was going on early in the year, you know, if they were playing on Thursday night football early on. They had a couple of primetime games, which you went from Monday night to Sunday night, and then from there, there's been a lot of noon kickoffs. One of the things I've mentioned a couple of times is that this was likely, this was possible, because the Bears are such a prominent franchise, and if they're good, and it's the first time they've been good in a while, then there's going to be a chance, a likelihood that they would get more national television opportunities, with NBC's likelihood to flex things with the Sunday night schedule. But since they've been at this for a bit, and even for a guy like Khalil Mack, who showed up basically week one, for him, he's not only had a bunch of reps in games, but now he's had some mental reps to sit back and look at other guys doing this and watching how they're getting coached by other guys. So these things are beneficial leading into now that, you know, whatever week we're in now, what is this, week 10 at this point of the NFL season. So I don't think while it's an adjustment, it's not nearly as difficult now, especially because we're into the divisional part of the schedule. So, you know, you're going to have a divisional game followed by a Thanksgiving game and then a Sunday night game. And it's not easy, but it's certainly doable. You know, this is something now that we're into November, they've been at this for a while on the set schedule. So if anything, it actually still adds some additional intrigue and interest and keeps your players locked in a way, because things are still fresh for what can end up being a point where the season starts to drag a bit. And I think that's part of why you see Matt Nagy doing things like throwing Eddie Jackson over for a snap on offense. You know, it's got multiple effects to it. One thing, it just gives your opponent something else to worry about and to prep for and to have to throw into the meeting room during the week. And that's why he kind of puts some of these things that could be viewed as a bit goofy in on the offensive playbook. But then also it keeps your players engaged when there is something fresh and fun that's going on. So an adjustment in the schedule because they're playing good football and they're first place in the division. They've got, you know, big divisional matchups going on. That's something else that keeps things fresh and popping and energetic and new. And that newness can be something that's very helpful at this point in the season.
After you play a Sunday game, When did you feel normal again?
Well, it honestly, it can sometimes depend on the opponent you played it against. You know, like coming off of that game against Buffalo, even though you got to get on a flight and fly back home for a few hours. But for the most part, there didn't appear to be guys who really got banged up. And especially when you've got a big victory like that and you're kind of playing free and loose and having fun, then your body tends to, you know, recover. Honestly, as weird as it sounds, your body tends to recover a little bit quicker. You know, you're not usually feeling as beat up after a game like that as you are just when the – and, you know, you can read books about just how the emotional end of what goes into your body ends up affecting. You know, the endorphins end up making you feel better when you actually have a more positive vibe after you come out of a certain situation. So when you got a big victory, you certainly need to still get your treatment, and you need to still go in there and be in the training room, get your workouts in. But when you have a big win, one, you're not needing to grind out every millimeter on the field quite as much once you get into the second half of a game like that, because you're able to dictate the action on your terms. You're not reacting to things as much as, you know, you're the puncher as opposed to the counterpuncher. So all those things help coming out of a game like what they just had against Buffalo. But, you know, now with these divisional matchups going on from Detroit to Minnesota and back to Detroit and the condensed schedule, what is it, like 3 games in 11 days, I think, that's going to be a very difficult stretch getting through November.
What's cool about it is that it's in the division, so the work that they've already done, like in my mind, this is from what I know from covering the league, the fact that you have a divisional opponent that you've already played, you've got the tape. I feel like even with the Sunday night game, because they're going to be playing the Lions again, and it will have happened, you know, a week before, that basically the game plan for the most part can stay the same, and that you can use Monday and Tuesday as recovery days, you know, and do have your game plan practice and your third down stuff all condensed Wednesday once you get to Detroit for travel, or do it early and then travel to Detroit because it's only a 45-minute flight. So that's the one good thing I think about it.
This will be an interesting stretch for Matt Nagy, his first time as a head coach, because with the Bears being at 5-3 and with them being at first place in the division, you know, like the first segment you and I just did, and I spent the majority of that for a team who's 5-3, first place in the division, that just won a game by 32 points, pretty much every play you asked me about, I spent a lot of that time pointing out flaws in how they performed. It's not because Leonard Floyd played really bad, or Roquan Smith played bad, or that Mitchell Trubisky played bad, but this is what the coaches need to be doing in the meeting rooms at this point in the season. They need to make sure that they have the full attention of the players on the roster and that these guys are locked in on the ways that they can continue improving. You know, like Glenn Pyers, the linebacker coach. I've been around him. He was the linebacker coach when I was with the Detroit Lions, and he's a guy who coaches with a level of detail. Ed Donatell was my defensive coordinator when I was both with the Packers and the Falcons. He coaches with extreme detail as he works with the secondary on pass concepts. You know, you look at the way that Kyle Fuller, who technically, you know, operates differently than Prince Amukamara does. You know, they're both very physical corners in coverage, but in a different manner, where, you know, Prince is a guy who's constantly working to stay in the hip pocket throughout the entire route with the receiver, and his hands are on him almost the entire way, whereas Kyle is looking to allow just a skosh of cushion, just a bit of cushion, almost baiting the quarterback into throwing the ball towards his guy. And then, as we saw the other day, once he's got a sense for what the route is and he's running that route for the receiver, Kyle loves to be able to drive on routes and come in with physical tackles and playing the ball as it's at that moment of truth where it's getting to the receiver. He's really good at that. And so both guys, physical and coverage, just in a different manner, but that's where the coaching end of it and their willingness and ability to study and to take that coaching onto the field of play with them ends up paying off. So when you're 5-3 and you're at the halfway point of the season and you're in first place and you've been playing good football here, it's going to be up to the players and coaches to make sure that they are still hammering away at the details of things like this. And you want to be smart about it because you do have a few guys who are a bit banged up right now. So you still need to work smart. You still need to work hard, but work smart at the same time. And this is where the test for Matt Nagy, his first time as the head coach in a situation like this, will really come into play in making sure that even though we've got reinforcements, we can't just count on the fact that Khalil Mack is coming back and Allen Robinson is coming back. So we're 5-3. We won two games in a row without maybe our two best guys on each side of the ball. And so we're just going to be better with them. That can't be good enough. You need to find ways to continue to press your team, to press the envelope on their end, so that improvement, that arc, that ascension through the end of the season in the second half here isn't just by accident. It's because you put the work in to get there.
Anthony, I appreciate the time. Thank you so much for all the hard work you do for us here at The Score. You can watch Anthony on Fox 32 after the game is done. Check him out on Big Ten XM Sirius 372 with our buddy Jason Goff, 6 to 9 a.m. and on the Pac-12 Network. We need to take a timeout. When we come back, we are going to talk with the man about town, the man who was inducted in the Chicagoland Hall of Fame this fall, Loyola head coach Porter Moser, next here on The Score. Say that my little nighttime show here on The Score was an early adopter. We are Loyola Rambler hipsters on this show, mainly because of the preview that we did with Porter Moser last year, where people were texting us and tweeting us and saying, man, I really want to go play for that guy. And then they go out and have a magical, magical year that ends in the Final Four. The head coach of the Loyola Ramblers, Porter Moser, now joins me here on The Score. Porter, thanks so much for joining me.
Lawrence, thanks for having me on.
So let's, before we get to this season, and I know that that's what you're really focused on, there are so many fans in Chicago that were captivated by the story of Loyola. Now that you've had some distance from everything, you've had a chance to enjoy it and kind of pack it away, what will you take from it?
You know, I think I'll take from it is that I grew up the most diehard Chicago sports fan, and that's been well documented. I mean, Cubs, Blackhawks, Bulls, Bears. I went to Ray Myers basketball camp for like 6 years as a kid. I had all the posters on my wall. Remember that Chicago's Finest with Andre Dawson, Walter Payton, and Michael Jordan poster?
Absolutely.
I had all that. I mean, that was me growing up. And to have a little piece of watching Chicago sports get so excited and to be a part of it. I was so much in a fishbowl preparing for every game that I didn't really realize the scope of how much Chicago got behind us during the moment. But now being out and about the whole summer, it was just so cool how much Chicago embraced us and how much they enjoyed it. And to have a little piece of my hometown sports history is cool. And I just tell you, it only makes me more greedy. I mean, we totally want to put the foot on the gas pedal and keep raising this program to another level.
In your wildest dreams, did you think that Loyola could have become what it became? And I mean, the conditions were right. Like, the Bears were struggling, the Bulls were struggling, and the city really needed something to latch onto, and they were going crazy about your team.
Well, of course, in your wildest dreams. I mean, that's what, you know, you dream of. I mean, since I got this job, I've been dreaming of relevance. I'll tell you a really cool story, Lawrence. I'm up in my office right now, and I put two pictures up. One was of the 63 team, and then another one was Sheridan Road with the 63 team in a convertible, and the car can't move. There's fans, completely a sea of fans surrounding the car. And I put it up. I'm like, how cool will this be if we can get this kind of excitement at Loyola Basketball? In the last 7 years, I've done everything from, you know, going dorm to dorm to, I mean, everything I could be at to get excitement going. And fast forward 7 years, you know, we beat Kansas State. The next morning, we fly back on our private jet that the NCAA provided us. We get bus rides. We're leaving O'Hare. We got a police escort to take us back. We're coming down Rogers Park, or coming into Rogers Park, coming down to, we take a right on Sheridan. We're coming down Sheridan right before, like, Bruno's, and all of a sudden, all the people on the other side of the street got out of their cars. They got their phones out. Everybody started coming out of the bars, and our bus got stuck. And I hit my wife in the leg, Megan, and I just said, hey, how cool is this? How about the picture in my office? And I think you got to have a vision. And it's just been a vision and a just a complete obsession just trying to get this thing rolling.
So you do have the Conference Player of the Year still on your team, but you lost a lot from last year's team. How do you make up for losing Dante Ingram and Ben Richardson and Andre Jackson and everyone else that was a big part of why you made it to the Final Four?
Well, the answer is not overnight. The answer is not overnight. We have to, the guys that were part of it have got to continue to drive the culture, be the keepers of the culture. And then they've got to bring along the new guys. You know, you look at guys like Lucas Williamson and Cameron Krutwig, they were huge for us. But it wasn't like they were huge for us right out of the gate. They both came along. We're going to have to be the same way this year. We have to bring along four new guys to be a part of this mix. So it doesn't happen overnight. It's going to take time for these guys to get their feet wet, the veterans to really bring them in. And I told the older guys, leadership is about making everyone around you better. And these veterans got to make everyone around them, the newcomers, better. And collectively having this culture get the thing, you know, moving in the right direction this year.
Does that speed up for a guy like Cameron Krutwig, who still a young guy, but played a whole bunch of games last year on a big stage?
Yeah, Cam's got to take it. Every one of them's got to. We have had this mantra about getting better. I told everybody that I could talk to, every player, every coach, I told my own mirror, we all got to get better. We can't stay the same as that. I told the administration, the marketing department, I told everybody. I've been very outspoken is we can't stay the same. You know, look at any company, any team, any organization, they keep reinvesting. They keep reinventing themselves. And like a guy like Cam Krutwig, we talked to him, you have to be better. You have to, you know, he's gotten his body is in better shape. He's worked on his footwork on defense. He's got tremendous footwork on offense. And he's gotten better. Marcus and Clay, I think, are stronger and quicker. And we've just been really trying to focus in on, like, what's happening right now. Like, winning this summer. We had to win this summer. And that winning this summer meant to us getting bigger, stronger, faster, bringing the new guys along, getting our – and that's what I think we've done.
Porter Moser joining me here on The Score for a few minutes as we preview basketball around the state. With 38 games played last year – did you have to change anything in your off-season routine?
Well, when you're allowed to do those postseason workouts up until the week before finals. And when you're done the first couple of days of March, you know, you'll probably give them 3 weeks off, and then you pretty much have the, you know, all of April to do workouts. Well, heck, we played all the way through April, and then I gave them 3 weeks off, and it was time to have the summertime. So that part of it, you know, we didn't have any of those postseason workouts during the school year, but our whole team was back in May. So we had everyone there, so nothing really changed. We were really focused in on no entitlement. You know, we have this rule in our locker room, Lawrence. It's one is protect the team. Two is no complaining, no excuses, no entitlement. And three is be early. But the no entitlement part was huge to us this summer. We didn't want to walk around like we were God's gift to sports. We were really hungry, humble, and trying to work as, I mean, tried to get way better this summer, and I was really proud of the guys, leadership guys like Marcus Townsend, Clayton Custer, just high character guys, just wouldn't let us walk, you know, the humility of this, and because it's been overwhelming. The Chicago's been so gracious, and I think what they liked about our guys is that they were such this unselfish group of guys, giving each other credit, and that's what we're not going to change who we are by what we did, and that was a key for us getting better this summer.
Does it help you send the message home that you weren't in the top 25, which I thought was ridiculous, by the way, but when you have the early preseason polls come out and Loyola isn't a big part of them, does that help cement no one's going to give Loyola anything?
Yeah, and you know me long enough. Look, I mean, this is not coach speak. I could care less about these preseason rankings. We weren't ranked last year. You know, and they don't mean anything. They really, really don't. And it is about, we can't focus on things that we don't have control of. What we have control of is getting better every day in practice, our next game, how we play, how we prepare. And I know that sounds like coach speak 101. I get it. But it is, I mean, the whether we're in or not, we lose three really good guys. You know, I'm not sitting there, you know, I want the motivation. We got different motivations in our locker room. It isn't about what other people think. And we didn't set goals. We set standards. You know, this is how we practice every day. This is how we carry ourselves. This is what we expect from each other during the workouts. You know, holding each other accountable. Those are all standards. And I think winning is a byproduct of all that. And, I really, the guys, I haven't said one word about whether we're in the top 25 or not, and nor will I.
Okay. All right, that's fair.
As long as at the end. Now, ask me that in February, I'm like, damn, we better be in there. You know, it's different. It's different in the February, though.
Well, I talked with Dan Muller, and I noticed that you have two games on the schedule that are already sold out, Nevada and Illinois State. What do you think it means that the Illinois State game, and it was sold out last year, is one of the ones that are already sold out?
Well, I think Illinois State is the team to beat in our league this year. They got everybody back. They've done a great job. So I know they're going to be really good. And we want them to be really good, except two games, you know, because we want to get multiple teams in this tournament. I think the Valley is going to be strong as ever. Cause I think Bradley, Southern, I think the four Illinois teams, I think Valparaiso right here is going to be, I think there's a lot of teams in the Valley that can make a jump, but I think, you know, with them, with what we did and Illinois State being a team that's picked at the top of the league, I just think, and I think there's, knowing this firsthand, there's a huge contingency of Illinois State people around here. And so I just think last year was sold out. It was an awesome atmosphere, and I wasn't surprised. But I'll be honest with you, I'm expecting and I'm hoping that, I mean, that's just early sellouts. I mean, I'm expecting, I know there's a couple hundred seats left for Tuesday's game. I'm hoping Chicago comes out. And we have a 5,000-seat arena. I hope we can sell it out.
And your schedule's pretty good this year, too. I mean, you've got some heavy hitters on there, with Nevada obviously being on there, Maryland being on the schedule. So what do you hope to accomplish this year? What defines success for this program this season?
You know, I want us to keep chasing. If I feel like, and I feel this way 100% right now, I want us to keep, you know, really grinding and chasing and enjoying the journey. You know, I've talked to so many coaches, and I actually went and spent a day with the Celtics and Brad Stevens 2 weeks ago. I just sat with a whole day with Brad, and I was just like, I'm just picking his brain about that year after the first Final Four to the second. And he was like, the pressure is so real, the expectations are so real. We were 14-9, and we just lost at Youngstown State, and it was miserable. And he said, "I just wanted to stop and talk to him about, you know, enjoy the journey, man. Have some fun with this, because they were just young kids feeling so much pressure." And I just feel like if we handled everything, we had such a focus in our workouts, but we were really close knit group. I want us to absolutely have, this journey of getting better, of stay in close culture. And then, you know, I think winning is a byproduct of all that. And I just, these young guys, they're such good people. And that's part of, you know, how we've tried to build this. But you can't put a number of a win on what's success. I just think, if I feel that, man, our culture, these guys have chased, put everything they had into this and enjoyed the journey, I think we'll win. And I want that from these guys.
Last year, it was Cameron Crutwig, where people were like, wow, who's this guy, and where did Porter find him, and why is that offensive lineman out there playing basketball and has those great feet like he does? Who's the player this year that is going to burst on the scene, or at least you're hoping is going to burst on the scene, and everyone will know their name and their story?
Here, Agwok. He's a 6'6", 220-pound guard for us. He's Lou Aldang's cousin. He sat out last year. He transferred in from New Mexico. It's been in the same mold. We've done a really good job developing kids on sit-out years. Milton Doyle sat out from Kansas. Clayton Custer sat out from Iowa State. Marcus Towns last year sat out, and then he played from Fairleigh Dickinson. And now Ahir sat out last year. And I think he's the guy that everybody, you know, they'll be talking about him very, very soon when they start seeing him play every day. Best athlete we've had wear a Loyola uniform in many years.
I was at the Chicagoland Sports Hall of Fame banquet. I didn't want to bother you because everyone wanted a piece of Porter Moser that night. But as someone who grew up loving and admiring Ray Meyer, I loved hearing you tell your story about the letter that you sent Ray. I was hoping, could you share that with my listener about
sure.
what that letter meant to you and what you were able to do because of it?
So I started going to Ray Meyer basketball camp probably in like third grade. And you stay out 2 weeks in Three Lakes, Wisconsin. And every time, I mean, for the listeners out there that went to that camp, it was just such a part of you growing up. I mean, there's no way you'd see people do that nowadays. It's 2 weeks in the woods. You ate in mess halls. You lived in cabins. But you had an awesome time. You were playing ball all day. It was just the best camp to grow up as a young guy and play ball. So I went every summer from like 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th. But when you started getting that 9th and 10th grade, you started going to those all-star camps, like 5-star. I went to BC All-Star. So then all of a sudden there was, you know, like my freshman to my sophomore, junior, and into my senior. I didn't go to his camp. I went to the those camps. Well, I was in my senior year at Bennett Academy, and our English teacher had an assignment, and it was a creative writing class. And he said that we're all going to write a celebrity. The first one to get a response gets like 50 points extra on their final grade. And like the light bulb's going off, man. I'm like, 50 points, this is my opportunity to get 50 points added onto my grade. And so I wrote Coach Meyer a letter. And I wrote him a long letter about what his camp meant to me growing up. Like, and I grew up a DePaul basketball fan watching, you know, Mark Aguirre and all them. And so I sent it to him. At the end, I told him what it was. I won the contest by like 30 days. He FedExed me a 3-page handwritten letter about what the camp, you know, does, how much he's enjoyed it. It was right after his wife Marge passed away, and I still have it, and it meant so much to me. And he was just an amazing man. And I run my camps like that, where I'm completely present. He ran a station. People that have come to my camps around the area know that I'm there the whole time, trying to really impact the kids at the camp and our players work it. But he was a special man and a special coach.
Porter, congratulations on everything. Thank you for being on the show. Good luck and good health to you for the rest of the year. And I hope, even as a DePaul fan, I hope that you guys can keep doing what you're doing, because I think it puts pressure on everyone in the area to be great. And that's a good thing.
Well, getting people excited about college basketball is a good thing. I think a lot of these programs in the city are ready to have great years. And I just think Chicago's a great sports city. So thanks, Lawrence, for having me on, man.
You got it. Thanks, Porter.
All right, bye.
That's Porter Moser, the head coach of the Loyola Ramblers. Man, how great is that? I know that we're talking football for most of the show, but like last year, if you walk away from an interview with Porter Moser and don't want to play for him, I think you're crazy. That guy is fantastic, and I hope Loyola does exactly what they were doing last year, makes it, puts some pressure on some people, goes deep in the tournament, and has us all thinking about cool stuff for whomever our college team is. Back after this on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.